This goes out to the AVS fam, to the crew getting ready at the Pepsi can. DJ Triple T banging thunder with the high jams. My dog Bernie Yan smiles in the West stands.
The ColoradoHockey.com podcast is brought to you by FSWIM.com, AVSFAM.com.
So the Avalanche had themselves a shitty little game. Yeah, it happens. It's going to happen quite a bit, actually, and I get it. It's a flashback. Everyone's a little freaked out because this is what it looked like last season when we really sucked, but it was just one game, and I know that we've seen little flashes here and there from other games too, but what we've seen a lot more than these flashbacks is the new version of what the Avs are going to be. There's going to be hiccups, people. There's going to be speed bumps, so buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride. But stick around if you're really into this team, because I think you're going to be surprised what they do actually come up to and what they raise their bar to. So quit freaking out so much. I understand that really sucked last night. I was disappointed too. I almost couldn't tweet anymore. Imagine that. So listen, we're going to bounce around a little bit. Every time you hear this noise, that means we've moved on, because we don't have long thoughts today. We have short thoughts. So let's say there was truly cause for concern, something that we should be a little bit worried about. I'm not saying that there is, but if there was, I think that it might be Nail Yakupov. He came out strong, right? He won everybody's heart right away. And I get, you know, you can't be a superstar every single game. But what we saw from him last night was the frustration of not performing the way that he thinks that he should. And what I worry a little bit about now that I've seen him play a little bit and I've seen his mood changes is, does he have the same affliction that Dutchie does? Is he a guy who's going to get in his own head and he's not going to be able to perform because he's not performing to the level that he thinks he should be, therefore he gets in a downward spiral? I don't know if this is true. My exposure to Nail Yakupov has been 4 or 5 games, something like that. So to say that that is going to happen, that would just be bullshit. I don't know that for sure. But this is my worry right now, is I see him not performing the way he wants to and starting to freak out a little bit about it. And I wonder how he's going to deal with that, or even more importantly, how his teammates around him are going to support him and what the coaching staff and the organization is going to do about it. Are they going to let him go down this downward spiral, or is he going to get some sort of mentorship that he should have had probably through his entire career? Is he going to get the people around him and go, hey man, chill out. It's good. We're fine. You sucked last game. Let's be awesome next game. I don't know what the answer is, and if you just look at the numbers, Yakupov's having a better year than a lot of other guys on the team, so maybe this is all bullshit anyways and we shouldn't worry about it. But I'm a fan. I do. I think about things like this as if somehow I'm going to change them. Let's keep with that theme a little bit. What else might we be worried about right now from individual players? Well, how about EJ? EJ hasn't really had a thrive moment yet, has he? I mean, he hasn't sucked, but he hasn't had that, oh my god, the Condor flyeth again moment. And that's fine, he's a defenseman, he's supposed to keep it real on the back end. But he also has this ability and something that we kind of count on from his offensive side that we just haven't really seen yet. We've seen him try to go end to end, but it hasn't really worked out yet. And it makes me wonder why he does it. What is the trigger that makes him think he needs to go end to end? And I think that it has to do with the production of our offense. I think when they're not doing good, he tries to fill in the gaps for them by doing something like that. So when you think about what EJ does when he goes all Condor, he busts down the ice as fast as he can, going through guys left and right, to at least cause some chaos so somebody can come in behind him, grab the puck, and shoot it in the net. Well, this is an awful lot like what Nathan MacKinnon is trying to do right now, and this is where I have a little bit of a problem with the way that he's playing. Nathan MacKinnon is fast as hell. We all get that, right? But the fastness doesn't have to be in top speed. The fastness can also be in bursts. It can be in slowing up every now and then, changing the pace, because he can beat guys with the first step of his big toe pushing off the ice. He has that kind of explosive power. So what I want to see is Nathan MacKinnon not always 110%. I want to see him shake it up a little bit. I want guys to think that they can catch him so that he can bust around them. And I think that this is the big flaw and always has been in Nathan MacKinnon's game. He's so fast, he thinks fast, he plays fast, but every now and then if he could slow it down and bring some poise to the game, he could make some people look really, really silly. And I think that he's going to get there. I think this is something that I don't just see, but other people see, including the people who employ him. I think that this is something that having a little bit better players with him could help with too, but this might be one that a veteran has to be in there helping with too, saying to him, slow it down, man. We know you can skate fast, but right now we need you to let the other guys get in the play. If you're uneasy, I get it. It's blasphemy to talk about Mac like this, but I think I'm seeing more and more of this too. People want to see him succeed, not just because we want to win games, but because we like Mac. We know he's special, but you gotta have that poise a little bit. Okay, over that. So let's get back to my new system of metrics. You're either surviving, you're thriving, or you're dying. We have players firmly in all three categories. Do you know who's well in the survive category right now, but also thriving? Semyon Varlamov. Yeah, he is thriving as a player, but he is just surviving because he's getting zero help back there. A 4-on-1, that's not something that just happens. That's not a fluke. That's a complete and total breakdown of the system. But relax, folks. I'm here to tell you that's okay. Why? Because we're a transitioning team. We are rebuilding. We're going to have highs. We're going to have lows. We're going to be like Katy Perry. We're going to be all hot and cold. We're going to be all yes and no. Okay, I'm going to stop that now. The point I'm trying to make here is that Varley can, in fact, hold us together as a team. He can steal games for us, and he can be awesome. But what we've learned is that that may not be sustainable through a full NHL season, which means he's going to need to get nights off like he did not too long ago. In a couple of games recently, he had less than 10 shots after two periods. Those are the kind of games we're going to have to give back to Varley. He is going to have to stand on his head, and he is going to have to keep us in games that we may end up losing. But that's the job of every other goaltender in the entire league. What I'm saying is that we need to have a little bit of a game plan. We need to make sure that he either isn't out there for as many games and let Bernier play a little bit, or we're going to have to give him games where we dominate and he sits back and enjoys the show. I think that the system's going to look a lot like this. Either we're dominating and letting him enjoy the show, or the coaches recognize this and they start letting Bernier play a little bit more. We know that Vardy is our number one, and legit, he is our number one, but he has had some issues with injury and he's had some issues with just kind of burning out, just like any of us that work too much and have too much of the load put on us. So let's run through the list a little bit. Who is currently just dying in this organization? Who is not progressing at all? Who could be losing their job or at least their spot on the roster or sitting in the stands as a scratch right now? So like Big Z isn't going to get scratched, at least not right away, but he is under the gun right now. He is a guy who takes too many penalties. Why? Because he's big. He also makes some dumb decisions too, but it's mostly because he's big. I don't like it any more than you do, but it's a fact. He's not going to get smaller and they're not going to stop calling penalties on him. So what he has to do is find a way to be more Chara-like. I know that sounds really weird too, but here's what I'm saying. Chara's a big monster of a dude, yet he doesn't take as many penalties. Why? Because he knows when to keep those elbows on his ribcage and he knows when to let up on a guy a little bit. Sure, he can kill anyone in the league anytime he wants, but he doesn't because he knows that there's going to be penalties if you do. Another thing that's happening here is Z hasn't been in the league as long as somebody like Chara. He's going to have to earn it. He has to get jumped into this gang we call the NHL. They're going to beat the shit out of him with penalties first, but eventually, if he responds well, doesn't show the refs up, and changes his game just a little bit, he's going to start getting the benefit of the doubt. Is there enough time for all that to happen, though? I don't know. That's why I think that in a small way, Z is dying right now, because he is not earning the trust of the Colorado Avalanche organization and coach to be on the ice when it is most important. So these are things we have to work out. Having a better defensive core altogether would really help his cause. But right now, he, like EJ, is trying to go out there and be a game changer because we're not getting the performance we need as a full team. Another guy who has yet to take flight is Matt Nieto. Now, Nieto got scratched. He came back. He gave a really good effort, but it didn't really produce much. If you're a results-based kind of organization like any sports team is, it's really hard to make a case if you're not going out there and getting some sort of results. Let's look at the opposite of that. Look at Sven Andergetto. He's about the same size. He's a guy who plays with speed, but somehow he's got the mojo right now and he's putting the puck in the net, he's getting points, and he's making awesome passes. I don't know if it's that he's getting the puck a fraction of a second earlier to win the battles or if he's just on a good run right now, but he is the opposite of what Matt Nieto is right now, and I think that people expected that to be the opposite. They expected Ghetto to fade a little bit and Nieto to come back a little bit. Why? Because he's from Long Beach, right? Nah, just kidding. What about somebody like Matt Duchene? I mean, the guy's playing well enough to be thriving for sure, yet he doesn't have a home. He doesn't know where he lives. He is an orphan in the NHL. It's a really well-paying job, but at the same time, it kind of sucks to not know who you're playing for and why you're doing it. So Duchene has managed to come out and put up points and play really good hockey, in my opinion. Been one of our best players, if not our best player on some nights. But the idea that he could always be traded has him just surviving right now. He is just sticking around long enough to see what happens next. He's going out and being a professional, showing other teams that he is the kind of guy that they want. And who knows, maybe the Avalanche are going to come back and say, we want you back. We really are upset about what we did and we think you're awesome for the team. And he might say, fuck you. He might say that that's bullshit. And those are both legit and acceptable answers. While Sakic has shown that he can do some good things, there are still some lingering things that are going to affect us for a long time. Duchene has every right to be pissed because he was handled and managed poorly by Joe Sakic in this organization. But you know what? So was Will Butcher, and he didn't even come to the team because he saw what was going on, and this is the true downside of what's going on right now. If you don't have your players' backs, other players are going to know that and not want to come to you. VC did it, now Butcher. People are starting to realize that they can make it into this league without having to go through the casting couch version of what the NHL does to them. You don't have to sign with the team. If you're a good player, other teams are out there looking for you. In this salary cap era right now, Doesn't matter where you came from. If you can get on the ice and you can support your team and you can bring value to the organization, they'll take you. So this old boys club that has done business the same way forever because that's how the boys done it might have to rethink what they're doing a little bit. They might have to take a cue from other teams that are getting these guys coming off of collegiate careers. The point I'm making is it isn't the same old boys club that it used to be. You don't have to have a pedigree to get into the NHL, and players will call your bluff, just like Butcher did to Sakic. I don't know what happened behind closed doors, neither do you. Nobody really knows, other than it seems like there was some sort of negotiation fail, and guess what? That's Sakic's job. I certainly don't intend to dwell on the Butcher thing, mostly because it pisses me off, but this is the point that I'm making. The game has changed, not just for the players, not just the way that they call it on the ice, but in the management and the organization side as well. Every competitive advantage will be used, and every GM will try to find the best talent it possibly can. Case in point, KSC has hired an advanced stats sports modeling guru to see if he can't help them to find that competitive edge that will help them to be better with information and make better decisions based on it. Some of these decisions are likely going to be which free agent should they take, who should they take in the draft, who should they take that didn't make the draft, and who's a good reclamation project, a lot like they did with Yakupov. And I think it's a really good move, because if you think about it, they're probably not paying this advanced stats guy who has this huge upside if it works nearly as much as they're paying the reclamation project in Yakupov right now. It sounds like a low risk, big reward situation to me, and I'm excited to see how this pans out and what happens, and if we can point to anything and say that is a direct result of some math guy who loves hockey who put it together so that he could be our current version of a Moneyball guy. Okay, my last thoughts for this podcast. There was some rumblings that the Avalanche leadership kind of just imploded on the ice during the last game. They didn't really show up when they should have, but it got me to thinking, and I kind of agree that that happened, but it got me to thinking, then what would they have done? What would this leadership have changed that wasn't happening on the ice? Would they have screamed and yelled between periods? I think that happens anyways. Would they have gotten in somebody's face on the ice to publicly shame them in front of the entire crowd? Probably not. I'm not entirely sure what the leadership would have done in that game or just exactly how they imploded. But I do agree there seems to be some leadership problems. I think that that leadership has a lot more to do with guys being ready to play the game and guys being mentally strong through the entire game. Just because you have the body of an elite athlete doesn't mean that you have the mental endurance and the mental toughness to be that guy who does it for 60 minutes every single night. There are going to be lapses, and when you play a team like the Nashville Predators, those lapses are going to count against you because they're going to take advantage of you every time that you have them. It wasn't exactly a horrible loss in my opinion. We didn't play great, but we played one of the best teams in the NHL right now, certainly last year. So to get beat up like we did is probably good. I'd rather get beat by that team than another team that we should have beat anyways. To me, this is just growing pains. This is what we're going to see, and we should all hang in there because it's good to have hockey in Colorado. This and every other podcast that we do is brought to you by AvsFam, AvsFam.com. Go check them out. They make awesome shirts for people who are awesome like you. If you like this podcast, tell your friends about it and then go subscribe. Just go to ColoradoHockey.com and click on the button that says get it on iTunes, or go to iTunes and search for Colorado Hockey. Either way, it's going to be in your pocket, ready for you to listen to whenever you want to. Stay awesome. Are you still here? Okay, for hanging out, we're gonna play something we don't usually play, the full intro song. We cut it off at a certain point because it's not that good, but hey, what the hell? You can see our flaws too. Here is the full intro song in all of its glory. See how many things you can pick out.
This goes out to the AVS fam, to the crew getting ready at the Pepsi can. DJ Triple T banging thunder with the high jams. My dog Bernie Yan smiles in the West dance. To the kids in the hall play mini stick hockey. To the guy in bathroom next to me for not talking. To the man who caught the puck with his bare hand. Jake swore the pagan respects with the anthem. To all the jerseys and the signs in the program. The KSC staff that makes it work in the background. TV crews, beat reporters and the ice girls. To Rycroft, Kiefer and Moza, Volley, Volley. Dutchy touch and ratting in to the crowd getting fizzy at the Pepsi can. To the one and only world's best hockey fans, here we go. You stay awesome, AVS fam.